Thank you for tuning into the podcast. As always, I'm so grateful for your interest and support. In this episode, I'd like to talk about peaceful ways of resolving conflicts. Recently, a person with whom I meet for spiritual direction made this observation. She said, "Jesus was against violence, wasn't he? There aren't any stories of him using violence to solve problems." I affirmed her impression and pointed out that Jesus did the opposite of violence. Look, for example, at how he responded to those who were responsible for his death. He does not say to his disciples, "Go get revenge and avenge what they did to me." Rather, he speaks words of forgiveness and love while trusting that the benevolent power of the universe he called his Father would find a way to transform this violent death into something life-giving. Jesus was a nonviolent person. Coleman McCarthy, a journalist and teacher and peace activist, from whom I've learned a lot about pacifism and nonviolent resistance, deliciously points out that though we say we are a peaceful people, we honor and glorify war makers. Most American students, from grammar school through college, will know who Robert E. Lee and Ulysses S. Grant were, as well as Napoleon, but do not recognize the names Dorothy Day, Jane Addams, or Betty Williams, all peace activists, the latter two Nobel Peace Prize winners. I invite you also to consider the monuments that adorn our country's capital. Most, but not all, honor war and war makers. What does this say about us as a people? I'd like to suggest that we are not taught the ways of peace and nonviolence, and this is why so many conflicts, from those between spouses to rival gangs to nation states, are solved, I use that word in quotes, through violent means. What follows is an approach to peaceful conflict resolution that I encourage us to teach our children and adapt to our own lives. It can be very effective, it honors the values of the gospel, and above all empowers us to be more Christ-like as we seek to live peacefully with others. I give credit again to Coleman McCarthy for teaching this to me. First, we define the conflict. What is it we're fighting about? We ask the other to clarify what this is about for them. How often, for example, have spouses been fighting about something and one thinks it's about dirty dishes left in the sink, and the other is still grinding about a comment the other made a few days earlier? On a larger scale, we think, for example, of the first Gulf War. Saddam Hussein said it was about a border dispute with Kuwait. George Bush I said it was about oil, and perhaps a more slippery reason, the duty of America to stop aggression. They were fighting, but about what, really? How often does this happen between spouses, friends, and others who are in tension? Second, we affirm that it's not you against me, it's us against the problem. Name the problem and get away from the idea that there is going to be a winner and a loser. Now we can cooperate and collaborate rather than see the other as one to be defeated. Third, list the relationship's many shared concerns. Give attention to the strengths first, which will be many, rather than the separation. Let's build from a place of strength. Fourth, when people have fought, don't ask what happened, but rather what did you do? This draws out facts, not opinions or versions of events, and this clarifies misperceptions instead of prolonging them. Fifth, listen actively. Mirror back to the other what you hear them saying, so they can clarify anything you are misunderstanding. It is said of Bill Clinton that one of his strengths as a communicator was that he listened to people in a way that left them feeling like they were truly heard. Sixth, find a neutral place to resolve the conflict because there is too much emotion on the battlefield, wherever and whatever it may be. Some schools, for example, have established peace rooms, places where students who are having a conflict can go and get help from a mediator. Seventh, start with what's doable. Peace and reconciliation can't be done quickly, so start small. What is one thing we can change that will put us on the road to peace? Most conflicts, whether between spouses or nations, start with small things that mushroom. The undoing will also happen in small, doable steps. Eighth, nurture forgiveness skills and let go of the desire for vengeance. Practice breaking the cycle of violence, whether it's physical, emotional, or spiritual violence. It is a basic human urge and instinct to want to hit back. Children feel this as well as adults. Forgiveness doesn't mean being a doormat or forgetting, but it does forgo vengeance in the face of wrongdoing. Finally, purify your own heart. Peace activist Jim Douglas said, "The first things to be disrupted by our commitment to nonviolence will not be the system, but our own lives." As Jesus said, "Clean the inside of the cup." In this way, we are role modeling the change we want to see in the world. It is a great teaching of our tradition that blessed are the peacemakers. I hope that these steps and reflections serve as practical steps for you to claim and live this blessing. And with that, let's go into a few moments of quiet meditation.